multiple sclerosis. I'm in the process of looking back on their case notes. I practice deep in the country, so I don't have the backup of a department, or my wife is here, she's the backup, and one or two others, my secretary. I have, for the last 4 years since I got interested in LDN, and I first got interested by reading a newspaper article in the Irish Times, and started to use it. And then I was coming to New York, and I said I'd like to go see Dr. Behari. So there were some people in Ireland who were actually making a film about it, and they sent a cameraman along, which was a bit of a surprise to me. But they arrived, and I arrived, and we filmed the interview. And I have found that a wonderfully useful tool, because the biggest problem with LDN for most people is the information is not out there. It's very hard to get doctors to prescribe it because it's off-label. And there's a serious lack of information, or maybe disinformation out there. It's just not out there. So I see patients and I sit them down after doing a general interview with them and maybe an examination, but I sit them down and I get them to watch this half an hour documentary. Because watching the documentary and hearing Dr. Behari talk himself about it is more valuable than anything I can say, because he's the man who started all this. And even though he looks a bit ill and he subsequently became very ill, and in fact, that was the last public thing I think he did, or near enough to it. And so I find it extraordinarily valuable. Every patient who comes to me for LDN has got to see. I won't carry on. I won't give it to them unless they see this. Because after seeing it, you do notice immediately that there's so much more knowledge. They feel happier about it. And it's just a good interview. I'm delighted you mentioned it. It was a great honor for me to present it last year. And it's up there on the website now. Anyway, getting back to my own, I have a total of, 55 plus patients up to about July of this year. And 50 of them who are MS patients. Now, I have been using it in other conditions, but for instance, scleroderma, lupus, cancer, but in very small numbers. And I'm in a small rural practice. But I mean, I have found it can be useful in cancer particularly. I haven't used it enough to know. But I've used it a lot in multiple sclerosis. And on looking back through my results, I have 50 patients whom I would have seen and followed up and have records on them all, and have been going through the records. And of that, I'm currently doing this. So of the 50, 36 responded. That's a 72% response to either a telephone interview and a 30-symptom questionnaire, which I give all my patients. And I think it was Dr. Lawrence gave me that originally, actually, which I find useful, but the patients find a little bit complicated, maybe, because there's 30 symptoms on it. It's hard enough to. But anyway, either through that, sending it back to me, or responding to me over the telephone, I got a 72% response rate. Now, of the 50 patients, and I like the round 50, because being half 100, I can make percentages easily on it and so on. So, I mean, I have more patients than they're coming on now, but I think 50 is a good number to for me. And I'm not a researcher. I've never been involved in research, actually, in medicine until quite recently. And that's in a pilot rehabilitation program where with the University of Limerick. So I've been exposed to some researchers recently, and I'm impressed with them, I must say. So I'm hoping to kind of piggyback them onto my little bit of research here. So of the 50, 34 were female and 16 were male. So that's about, 68% versus 32%. So it's twice as common among females, which is well known anyway. Now, the age group that I would see, 64% of them were in the 40 to 60 year age group. 22% were in the 20 to 40 year age group. And 14% were in the 60 plus age group. So that, to me, I'm wondering, why am I seeing them at this age and I'm not seeing them younger? Because it often presents in the 20 to 30 year age group. And I think, I don't know if it's true here or not, but there's a general denial process goes on for quite a while. people may take up therapy, they may not, they may start, they may stop, they go to the regular medical centers, et cetera, et cetera. And that can go on. For instance, I have a patient of my own now who has had it 10 years. Well, he's only recently come around to, he's tried the other stuff and one reason or another, so it's 10 years later and I see him. And you know, really what I want, if I believe this drug works, which I do, is that everybody who gets a diagnosis of MS goes on it. Just like everybody who gets a diagnosis of cardiovascular disease gets aspirin. That's not exact analogy, but I mean, something similar. There is something about this that is working and that people should have it as early on as possible. There would be no need for double-blind trials or et cetera, if people didn't get a recurrence, or as your research suggests, only had one recurrence later, which is what I'm hearing too, that the exacerbations afterwards, if it happens, it usually happens once and it's of minor, it's not of major, but that's what I hear. So I don't think I'm seeing the people at an early stage, which is a pity. I think if the neurologists, and to remember in Ireland, we have 16 or 17 neurologists, we should have 50, country like Denmark. So we're very under resourced in that way. And usually it's the family practitioners like myself who actually deal mostly with a lot of the MS. So in effect, and I have case studies of 50 people. As I say, 68 were female, 68%, and 64% of that group was between the ages of 40 to 60. That's the dominant team. Now, Ireland has nearly the highest rate of MS in the world. We have 7,000 cases between north and south. And that's a very high rate. Scotland is also very high. We don't know why, but it's just very high. If you take the 40 to 60 age group together here, 88% of the people I'm seeing are over 40 years of age. And as I say, that's people you'd get it younger, so I'm not seeing them at an earlier age. Now, of that group of 50, what happened, or what did I find? Well, I had a total. I have a few other cases, but I've taken them out of, as I say, one scleroderma, one nodosum, and ulcerative colitis had one, and which interestingly, I sent along to the gastroenterologist, and I gave him all the bump I had on this, and I had the patient on. I had suggested starting them on LDN, and I had started them, and he took the patient off after a few months. I don't know why. I haven't had that conversation with him yet. So talking to our specialist colleagues can be very difficult, no matter whether it's gastroenterology or neurology or whatever. And I've one motor neuron disease in a young person, and I'm hoping it's slowing it up. It seems to be, but you know, he's deteriorating, but so you don't know. But the other 50 are straightforward MS, and I haven't broken them down into relapses, but at the age group that they're coming at, they're more into secondary progressive at that stage, if it's 40 to 60. Their symptoms are quite severe, usually. So what happened with the 50? Well, one never started because she had a lot of pain and was on narcotics for the pain, and she couldn't make the jump of getting off the narcotics, and I wouldn't feel happy about, you know, it's just impossible, really, to give LDN with narcotic drugs. I wish she had, but she didn't. 12 discontinued the drug. Two of them had stomach pains and aches and some nausea, and were generally unwell in the abdominal area. Exactly what was causing the pain, I couldn't exactly determine. And I didn't send them to hospital or anything. But they wanted to come off the drug, and they did. And they've been relatively okay since, but they've been asking me, should I go back in it? And you know, that's why I was asking the questions about dose relation and side effects. And probably they should, and probably at a lower dose. Then, three of them had no improvement after 6 months. They said they had no improvement at all, and they stopped. And that's fair enough. Two of them had complications, co-illness. They had complications with other conditions, and these were often severe. And in assessing the results of the MS group of 50 patients, who I said I had a 72% response rate, and I hope to have a 100%. I can track all these patients down. I can interview them just like you've done. I mean, but it's a fair bit of work, and I just haven't got around to doing that yet. I'm confident I can do it. The following results were, I was gleaning from my feedback from those patients. 54% said their fatigue had improved, mostly a lot. 38% noted no progression in any way. 30% said their mobility was improved, often a lot. 16% said their bladder functions were improved, mostly a lot. And 16% said that their mental life, whether concentration or mood or whatever, had improved, often quite a lot. 20% said they had disimproved, and that was often a lot too. Now, I just want to deal with that 20% first, because these were a particular group, and when you looked at each case individually, you always saw a reason for something that happened. So the latter group of 20% were frequently hit with very serious concomitant illness. One got a brain tumor and died, young man, unfortunately. One fell, fractured a femur, and really never got back there. Ended up in a wheelchair, actually, and again is having difficulty accessing rehab facilities, which is a problem in our country, too. And the whole thing has just become a little bit, and she's quite young, she's in the 30-ish age group. But and she had been doing well in LDN, but once she had the fracture and she was laid up and the operation and everything, she just hasn't done so well. Another got pericarditis, congestive heart failure, and lupus. That's a hell of a dose. And discontinued. Often these people were discontinued in hospital, and I noted that during this morning, that it was the hospital physician, and then they didn't go back, and those things happen. Another had a severe pyelonephritis, and again was in hospital, and discontinued. Another was on continual steroids. That's something that hasn't been mentioned this morning, but invariably, people who've had high-dose steroids intravenously in the previous year don't do well, in my opinion. And I'm not inclined to treat them. I like them to be offered for at least a year. But when you go into hospital in Ireland with symptoms, you get high-dose steroids. Now, interestingly, what you said, people who get exacerbations and who phone me, now they wouldn't be living in the area, but they would phone me for secondary advice, let's say. I'd advise them to go along to their own doctor. But I would try to tell them that it's possible to keep on the LDN. The symptoms, if you instead of 60 milligrams of steroids, which is high dose, take 15 for 4 or 5 days, or play it by ear. These people have all got better within a week or 10 days. So that's a very lower rate or severity of illness. And, I'm not against steroids. I mean, I use them all the time as a general physician. But you just have to be wary about their effect on the immune system. And LDN is basically, as we know, and I was delighted to hear the extra physiology that's now being known about how LDN may work, because it's extremely complex. But people who are on steroids, and some people are on low-dose steroids, 7, 10 milligrams, that kind of thing, I prefer they wouldn't be on them, and I'm not inclined. And they tend not to do that well. Now, another girl of that 20%, she got an offer of going on to Tysabri. And, of course, in Ireland, a lot of these drugs are provided free by the state if you're in the program. So she took that, and she came off the LDN. And two stopped because of the cramps and abdominal effects. And also you get sleeplessness, which came up this morning again, that's quite common, and people may stop, because of that. A high percentage of the people who responded and who were getting benefit noted they had one symptom improvement, maybe. That's around 70%+, I would have thought. And then a smaller number would have had noted two or more. Now, you had all this documented. I haven't been able to do that, but just going through my own records and gleaning out of it, I would say it's in the region of two would be 30%+. And then three or more symptoms, and some, you go lower again. But by and large, the clear analysis of this, if I get 100% response rate, which I hope to do in time, will be clearer and will give me better insight into this. But it's what is very obvious to me from these stats is that there is some benefit to MS patients who use LDN, and the figure is around 70% plus. The degree varies from almost total cure, a cure in inverted commas, to modest improvement in one or more or other areas, one or more symptom areas I'm talking about. However, all the successes are significant. The patients want to continue, that's very obvious. Whereas when they go along to the hospital clinic, you know, almost automatically it's very negative. They get very negative kind of directions. But if you were to ask them, like, and I think Skip's survey is very good in the sense that you're directly asking the patient. I mean, I know there's some very good researchers here today. We've had them. I've not been involved in heavy research myself, but I am, after 40 years practicing medicine now, I'm a little wary about research, and I don't know how good or bad or indifferent it is, but the first question I'd always ask is, who's paying for it? Because the former editor of the British Medical Journal, who retired last year, has written a book in which he says most of it is bunkum because you're actually getting what you're paying for, and it's who you're paying for, and if they're not getting the results, that's it. I don't know, but you have to worry about that. The research that we're conducting through Limerick University in Ireland is a mixture of stats and a mixture of the interviews. And this research, to my knowledge, is moving in that direction. And I think that's a good thing. But so, as I say, all the successes to the patients are significant and point to the fact that this drug in small doses is seriously helpful to a large number of patients. It is almost free of side effects, non-toxic at this dose, and is cheap, and at the very least should be an offer to all the MS patients, particularly those who are newly diagnosed. If the 7,000 patients in Ireland with MS had been offered LDN at diagnosis, how different might their picture be now, and how much money might we have saved? You see, if it's all about money, well, think of what the patients are costing when they go into the facilities. So it would be good, economic sense, to do that. But you see, it's very difficult to do it. Ireland is a good country to try out this kind of approach. And people like Phil and Mary Boyle have been trying to get the government to initiate some studies in Ireland, because a lot of the early cardiac research was done in Ireland and Boston. You can compare the Irish in Ireland and the Irish in Boston. One was a homogeneous population, the other was a mixed. And some very valuable findings were got out of that. In a similar way, neurological research could be done if somebody took the trouble to do it. However, like most countries, Ireland is riddled with complex business, politics, jobs issues, and something like this is easily pushed aside by both government and the medical profession. I think that has happened. Mary has found that by approaching government people. We always get lip service. We always get nice talk. Nothing happens. Now, it might be interesting to know that Ireland is the highest producer of pharmaceutical chemicals in the world per head of population. There's a huge chemical industry. And therefore, the politicians are not going to push this. I mean, they'll tell you directly, privately, you must be joking, man. They're going to say, we're going to China, you know? You know, you can talk about our low tax rate in Ireland, which is the lowest in Europe. Anyone who wants to come, we've got a very low tax rate. But, we want the industries, and I can understand that. That's a valid way of talking. They won't say it openly that they're not going, they'd say the nice things, but that's the reality, I'm afraid. And the medical profession know better because they don't have the information. They don't have any information about LDN. So what to do? Well, solid research, such as some as we heard, is wonderful. I think that it's, Dr. Cook is right. It's beginning to come from other sections apart from the neurological, that LDN is a useful drug and has been used in double-blind trials. But also a small little, I mean, I hope to, when I get all this stuff in, publish it, possibly anyway, if I can, with the university people, get some solid researchers with me. Hopefully I'll convince them to do this. and publish it with say, under the University of Limerick Life Sciences. The thing is, where do you publish it? And is a professional journal the place to publish it? I published in the MS book in Ireland, and it was the most widely read article of the whole year. This is in 2005, isn't it? And they rang me at Christmas to say, thank you for publishing that article, because we got the most phone calls about that than any other article for the whole year. And interesting, the leading neurologist in the country wrote a counter article in the same issue. Now, she wasn't actually being slanderous, but she nearly was. You know, I mean, I could have taken issue with her, but I didn't bother. But the thing is, she's in the largest hospital in Dublin, and she's saying, who is this Bihari guy anyway? You know, I mean, what's research into AIDS got to do with, you know, I mean, it was just ignorant, and I wouldn't bother myself. But I'll talk to her sometime when I get the right information. But that's the kind of thing that happens. But I think more and more research, small and large, if we can get it, that all builds up. Choosing the battleground of public opinion is vital to swing it in favor of LDN, and patient power is important. And I'm wondering, is it government journals? Is it bringing a pharmaceutical company on board? But as somebody said this morning, there's no money in it. There really isn't, when you consider the cost of producing a new drug, $1 billion to get one onto the market and so on. So who's going to get interested in this? Or is it by lobbying influential people? I don't know. But I'm encouraged enough by the story of the two Australian doctors, whom most of you would probably remember, who discovered the cause of peptic ulceration when they found the bacteria H. pylori in the stomach years ago. And nobody believed them, particularly the gastroenterologists at the time didn't. And they really were despised for quite a long time by most of their medical colleagues. But they were right all the time. They stuck to their guns. And, you know, 30, 40 years later, they've been acknowledged. And everybody does it now. And a week's antibiotics is the usual treatment. So by an increasing number of patients being positive about the drug, and by some fair-minded physicians around the world just using it more, if we can get the word out there gradually, I think that will help. Just to finish, I quote Machiavelli. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but Machiavelli, and I'm paraphrasing because I got this from a friend of mine once when he realized what I was at. He said, you know, you're trying to do the impossible. But he said in 1540, the hardest thing in the world to do is bring about a change in a society. Everybody will be against you, especially those with a vested interest in the status quo, who have lived for a long time with tried and tested ways, or who have something to lose. And I'm afraid he might well have been talking about LDN today. That's more or less the content of what I have found so far. But of my patients, the 50 patients I mentioned, I mean, you hear the things that you hear other doctors who are using LDN say. Like one patient here says, my spasticity is gone. My nerve pain is gone completely. Movement is much better. I'm off Neurontin. I'm off Lyoresal. You know, that's seriously good medicine as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I'm not claiming it, but as the agent of it, I'm quite happy to be associated with it, you know. And if 70%+ of patients are saying something very positive about the drug, they can't all be wrong, you know. There's got to be something that's, you know, my balance is much better. Urinary, just like I said, as a urinary tract, etc., was the second highest improvement. But fatigue, particularly, and general mental agility and well-being was certainly improved in over 70%. Great energy, very stable, no deterioration. My memory is better. I've had a few patients who've had stem cell therapy, interestingly. One has done well and the other hasn't. Now, I'm not an expert in some, I don't think anyone is yet, but it's available there. But some of the operations are a bit iffy, you know. I mean, people in Europe go to Holland or the Ukraine. That's what tends to be happening. Well, the Ukraine is a university department. The Holland operation is a very dubious, maybe. But I mean, one patient has received, you know, seemed to get very much better after it, and her eyesight, she got back her color vision, and so on. So I think down the line, that's something that's coming on. Other patients say they I don't tell anybody to stop beta-ferrin or interferons because I can't and I won't do it. But I just say, if you feel better, you're going to have to make a decision about that yourself. But I generally say anything that has a negative effect on the immune system, and we've heard about the innate, you know, the different things that are there, and it's great. I mean, I feel particularly uneducated in immunology because it's moving so fast, and that's great. But I mean, and I think LDN does work somewhere in that field that we heard about this morning. And but patients who are on beta-ferrins, or Copaxone is the kindest drug to be on, I find. Steroids and the beta-ferrons generally are not LDN friendly. And so I would say, you know, see how you get on. If you're doing well, you're going to have to make up a decision about that. So I think that's about all. And when I get the whole 50 done, 100%, I'll get back to you.